Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will sit down with Dr. Chris Teutsch, Extension Associate Professor and Forage Specialist with the University of Kentucky. And as always, we will wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Morning, Jay.
Morning.
How's David and Vicki doing this morning?
Pretty good. It's a little damp out while we're recording this. We got, looks like, some really good forage weather as we're going to speak on today. So, you know, I'm not too sure how much hay folks are going to get cut. But, you know, it's Vicki, of course. We'll have to go through this the whole thing again. Got way more rain than me and Jay got.
Maybe we don't have to go through it all summer, though.
But she got way more rain than we did, which I'm glad, because I'm glad we didn't get that much rain.
Yeah, it wasn't really a good thing this time.
No, that's right. That's exactly right.
How much was it, Vicki?
Gosh, back a couple of days ago, it was about 5 inches, and we've had a couple of rain since. Not the whole county hasn't gotten that, but pockets have. Yeah. And particularly right in this area, there's going to be a good bit of replant on corn and soybeans, both, I'm afraid.
5 to 8 inches is what I'm hearing up here. You know, at home, I think I've got like an inch and a half when they got all that.
So. Absolutely. And I might even have just a little bit less than you do.
Yeah.
It's out there. We got some. I was saying earlier before we started the show, my garden, and it's just half planted, but it's already received more rainfall than it did the whole summer last year. So
yeah, and I was in Princeton last night at a ball game, and it's dry. Comparatively to around here, I mean it's very dry down there. So
the bulk of the rain came over the weekend, Sunday and Monday, but we've gotten 2 or 3 little showers, you know. And when it's muddy, it's just muddy, and that's the way it's been here.
And you know, talking about the difference between there and here, night before last, I actually planted some more of my garden. It's not muddy. Had a little moisture in it, but it wasn't muddy by any means.
Yeah.
I was crawling around on my hands and knees, so, I mean, it wasn't muddy.
You'd have mired up here. Vicki.
Yeah, you would have.
No doubt about that.
Yes, you would have.
Well, our guest with us today is Dr. Chris Teutsch. As David likes to say, you're officially a retread now. This is the second time you've been able to visit with us. And that's the label we give to folks we've invited back. So you made the cut if you get invited back.
Well, thank you.
Everybody doesn't get to come on and for sure be on here twice, Dr. Teutsch.
Well, we're glad to have you, and glad you're not only with the University of Kentucky, but glad you're with us today. So.
Well, thank you.
I know we've got some things to, a lot of things to cover. You brought some information with you. We're going to, I'll go ahead and hit this at the first part of the show, and then we'll wrap it up and bring it back again. But May 25th, if you want to, talk just a little bit about your forage tour we're going to be having.
So we do a Western Kentucky Summer Forage Tour each year. We're doing a little bit early this year, and we're featuring a farm that was purchased by Justin and Kate Adams in 2016. And it was kind of neglected for a number of years, and they have done a good job of kind of building it back up. I mean, they're not up to 100% yet, but they're working that way. And they're doing some innovative things. They're direct marketing some grass-finished beef, and they've got some hogs in the woodlot that they rotate around, and some chickens, and they're just a really nice couple, and they're doing a good job with what we would term regenerative agriculture, and we wanted to kind of feature that on our summer forage tour. It's going to be on May 25th from 3 to 7 in just right outside of Princeton, Kentucky, so come and join us if you can. We just ask that you pre-register for the tour so we can get a count for dinner.
You know, Dr. Teutsch, that's kind of been a buzzword, you know, this regenerative agriculture. And maybe for the folks that are listening that don't understand what that is, can you just kind of explain just a little bit, you know, just kind of hit the high spots of exactly kind of what that is?
So I wish I had a perfect definition for it. It's a little loose, right? But to me, what regenerative agriculture means is that we're taking something and making it a little bit better, and we're doing it through management. So a lot of times when we're in agriculture, people want to sell you something to make things better. And And while that works sometimes, a lot of times you just need to put in the time in the management resources and start to manage things a little bit better. In terms of grazing, it's improved grazing management, testing your soils and making sure that you have what you need there in terms of soil fertility, which is often one of the major limitations when you're trying to restore the productivity on a rundown farm.
I think, too, the thing to keep in mind when you're going to start a project like that, it's not all going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in 1 year. And sometimes, you know, that can be considered a pretty long-term project that you're going to be working on. But over time, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because you're going to be focusing on these things and you're going to do a good job at this and get that where it needs to be and then move to some other improvements that you need to make. And just making that time investment and having a plan there to make these changes on these farms.
That's a really good point, the fact that it's not going to take place overnight. Mm-hmm. There's no magic solutions to cleaning up some of these farms. I did some soil samples this week for a guy for hay and pasture ground, but he has also recently done some logging. He's cleaning some woods up. He was wanting his cows to help clean those woods up. And the ground, because there had not been anything on this farm in a few years, the P&K, I was surprised the pH actually was it was better than I thought it'd be. P&K numbers were rather low, so he's going to have a lot of P&K additions to put. And knowing him, I sent him a text message right after I worked up the soil samples. I said, when you get these, call me, because we're not going to put all this fertilizer on in one shot. This is going to be a couple of year thing, you know. Mm-hmm. For one thing, just trying to manage his resources. You know, he doesn't need to put a ton of money into one thing right now.
Yeah, he probably can't afford it.
Right. That's the point. So I think that Vicky's made a very good point with a lot of these farms we're cleaning up, is it doesn't get done overnight. And you mentioned farms that had been neglected. The management or really just activity is what gets them into that shape. And a lot of times they're farms that may have had livestock on them at one time or another, may have had smaller fields, but they don't fit into the large management scheme of a lot of the current farmers today, or they're not croppable, or somebody would have been renting them and keeping them up.
Right, and the other thing with these smaller farms that people are purchasing is a lot of times they will have absentee owners, and the neighbor will be cutting hay off of it to kind of keep it in production. And really, when it's not yours and you're cutting hay off, you're removing a lot of nutrients from that farm. Every ton of hay has about 40 to 50 pounds of nitrogen, 15 pounds of P2O5, and 40 to 50 pounds of potash in it. And when you continue to draw those off, you draw those levels down fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, you've got a farm that's made up primarily of broom sage. So that's a challenge for
oftentimes
sure.
Oftentimes fields like that aren't limed accordingly either. So
that's right. So in broom sage can be it can be related to your soil pH. It can be related to phosphorus and even potash in some cases. So getting a soil sample and really understanding what that limiting factor is critical to helping bring these farms back. One of the neat things about this farm tour is that Kate and Justin have agreed to talk just not about the good things they've done, but some of the mistakes they've made along the way. And there's a lot of value in that for other producers, because if they can avoid those same mistakes that they've made, that's a good thing.
I'm a big fan with extension meetings of farmer panels.
Yeah.
Discussing and answering questions of audiences. And oftentimes some of the best information can be those mistakes that people admit and own up to.
So. Yeah, I had an opportunity. Actually, I got to meet her. We were in Bowling Green for the Mid-South Stocker Conference, and she was dropping somebody off from a deal or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, she was there, and we talked a good bit about the pasture poultry deal because I just am intrigued by that whole chicken tractor deal. And, you know, when she was talking about the way they were doing some things, and you could tell that it wasn't it was a very much a passion for her, you know, to be able to, you know, to fix this farm. You know, they had bought this farm and it was run down, and to be able to bring this farm back to life, you know, you could tell it was a very much a passion. So it should be a really good field day.
Yep.
So. Is there a link that they can go to? Because we can put that on the show notes. of this podcast. So if there is a link, then we can get that on there.
Sure. There's a link on the flyer, and I'll leave some flyers with you all. Best way to find out more information about this field day is just to simply Google UKY Forages, and then that'll bring up our webpage. It'll be the first thing on the list. Click on our webpage, and then there'll be a big blue button that says Upcoming Events. If you click on that, it'll have all of our upcoming events on it.
Okay. We can put that in our show. Yeah,
absolutely.
And the show will be airing about 10 days before the field day, so whenever anybody hears this show drop next Monday morning, anybody that's interested, just follow that link, and we'll put you in touch with the registration.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know what we're here to do today is talk about some summer forages and some summer annuals that folks could possibly consider. And, you know, Dr. Teutsch, we came out of last year was just it was hard. And a lot of people came in to last fall and they thought, well, I'll seed some forages, you know, some fescue and orchard grass. And some folks got stands, some folks did not. I mean, it's spotty in different places. I've got stuff on my farm that I have not had in the past. Little barley is one of them that I have that is taking over, you know, where I seeded last year. So, you know, when we're talking about looking at pastures and hay fields and different things like that, what are going to be some summer annuals that we can come in there from a management standpoint? You know, what do we need to do, and what are the selections that we need to make to help us out this summer?
So whenever I think about summer annuals, and I wrote an article for Cow Country News last month on summer annuals, you know, you have to think about how it's going to fit into your whole system. And certainly we don't want a forage system based on annual forages because they're fairly expensive, and that's important to realize going into it. Now, summer annuals can be a good complement, especially if we're have pastures or hay fields that are thinner and are not going to be productive. A good thing to do is come in late spring, early summer, is plant some summer annuals into those fields and then plan on renovating those fields with a cool season perennial grass in the fall. That's probably the biggest use of summer annuals in my mind is as a part of a renovation plan for the whole farm. And some of those summer annuals we can use, I mean, we've got sorghum Sudan grass, which is a traditional one. It's probably one of our most vigorous summer annuals. Mm-hmm. Vicki and I did a demo on a farm here in Webster County a number of years ago, and where we planted sorghum Sudan on some hay feeding areas, we really reduced the amount of summer annual weeds there because sorghum Sudan gets up so quick and just gets a closed canopy and shades out a lot of those summer annual weeds. Yeah. So pearl millet's another one. One of the issues with sorghum Sudan is that it does have prussic acid in it, and that's mostly an issue in the fall when we start to get frost. When we get frost, the cells rupture and it releases the precursors for prussic acid formation. So we need to be careful when we start to get frost in the fall. Pearl millet is another summer annual that does not have prussic acid. It's not quite as vigorous as sorghum Sudan grass, but it can be a good choice also for a summer annual.
I made a recommendation to a guy just here the other day about pearl millet, and his goal was to do exactly what we're talking about, is just bridge the point of we're at the end of spring, beginning of summer. Mm-hmm. I'm going to renovate this all in the fall. In his use, he was not planning on using the ground for anything. He just didn't want a bunch of weeds to develop and have a weed seed bed to deal with in the years to come. And pearl millet was what we ended up with. He actually wanted to maybe have a spot for his farm employees to dove hunt over this fall. And I said, you know, they'd be perfect. You'll be killing it about the time, or working it up about the time you're ready to seed your cool season grass anyway. So.
Is he going to do conventional tillage for his establishment, Jack?
He is. And actually what we had talked about, he's going to broadcast spread and then just work it in with a color packer.
Okay.
Again, he was trying to minimize his expense because all he's trying to do is hold it till late August, early September.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We felt like that was the cheapest way to do that.
Yep. Yeah.
Dr. Teutsch, maybe talk about a little bit about, you know, from an establishment standpoint, like if you're going to use sorghum Sudan grass or millet or something of this nature, what are the best ways to establish that? Is it a no-till drill? Is it conventional? Is it sowing it on top of the ground, working it in? And and color packing it, you know, what are the ways? And, you know, it's going to vary, obviously, from if a pasture or something of this nature.
Yep, for sure. And there's multiple ways you can be successful with establishment. If we're in an area that's kind of been abused over the winter months and it's kind of rough from feeding some hay there, then we'll need to do some kind of a tillage probably to level that out. And then we would use a conventional establishment. So we'd disc it up, get a good smooth seed bed there, broadcast that seed on, and maybe come back and either disc it lightly or call to pack that seed in, depending on what species we're using. Mm-hmm. And we'll get a good stand that way. Now, if it's not a disturbed area and it's just kind of a little bit thin, then we can drill it in with a no-till drill. And, mm-hmm. you know, that no-tilling is always my preference if we can do it, because we leave stuff on top of the soil and we tend to help reduce erosion when we use a no-till drill. So that's right. That's kind of a good choice. Sorghum seed angrafts, we want to plant about an inch to an inch and a half deep. Pearl millet, a little bit less. We want to be not deeper than an inch with pearl millet. If we use a non-traditional summer annual, something like crabgrass, then we want to be pretty close to the top of the soil. And we often discount crabgrass as a weed, and it certainly is if it's in your wife's flowers. But but crabgrass, you know, can provide a significant amount of forage in the summer months. And the nice thing about crabgrass is that it kind of fills spots in the pasture. And we can probably come on, if we graze our pastures tight in early spring, broadcast a little crabgrass seed on, drag them in with the pasture drag, and then graze it a little bit more. That crabgrass will fill those voids in that pasture in and kind of provide some summer grazing. I used to say, when I worked in Virginia for 17 years, we used to say if it wasn't for crabgrass and wire grass, that's what we called Bermuda grass, you know, we'd have a lot of hungry cows during the summer months.
You know, I've had a lot of crabgrass come in my pastures, just natural old, you know, just common crabgrass. And, you know, it's a great thing for the summertime, but it's not worth a darn in the fall when you're trying to stockpile fescue, because it'll just take over if you, you know. Now, and talk about, you know, and even, and I've considered, I've got a place or two that I'd like to sow some Red River crabgrass. Talk about the management of that. Talk about how, you know, when do we need to graze it? You know, how big does it need to be? You know, obviously, you know, when it puts up a seed head, you know, we're probably behind the eight ball. But, you know, talk a little bit about grazing management of that crabgrass.
I'll just start out with the traditional summer annuals like millet and sorghum seed angrafts. We don't want to graze too close. We want to start to graze those when they're about 18 or 20 inches tall and graze them down to about 6 to 8 inches. So we want to make sure we leave plenty of residual to give us good regrowth. Crabgrass is kind of a different management style. So we want to start to graze that ideally when we're about 6 to 8 inches tall and graze it down to about 3 to 4 inches. So much more like we would do for a cool season pasture because it tends to have a lower growth habit than sorghum seed angrafts or pearl millet. All of our summer annuals will respond to some nitrogen fertilization. So one way to really stimulate growth during the summer months is to put on some nitrogen as those summer annuals start to grow. And it hurts my heart when I go across the countryside and I see a summer annual field that somebody had taken the time and money to plant, but it's just really struggling because they haven't put any nitrogen fertilizer on it. So it's important to remember that nitrogen is an important part of summer annual production.
And for most people who, you know, the majority of their pastures or forage ground is a cool season type of species, they're just not used to fertilizing that time of the year, not nitrogen fertilizer anyway. Yeah. So it's completely different management.
Yeah. One other thing I'd like to mention with the non-traditional forages is if we do use crabgrass, you can always throw a little bit of annual Aspides in there. And if you've got some pastures that are a little bit lower and soil fertility, annual Aspides will do fairly well mixed with crabgrass in those pastures.
Yeah, I did sow some Aspides this year. So
did you?
Yeah, I did. So we'll see how it does. I hadn't had a chance to get back out there and look to see if it came up, but we did the whole we seeded it the first week of March, mm-hmm. and overseeded it in our pastures there. So, you know, we'll see how that does. And a thinner, you know, kind of place that I fed hay a little bit too, that still had some grass and felt like it worked in with that, and then drilled some ryegrass in there too. So, you know, hopefully we're going to get a pretty decent stand. I'll let you know.
Was that in an area that you plan to renovate in the fall?
Yes, we're going to come in there this fall and try to renovate that and plant back fescue and orchard grass back in there. And, you know, and I know Dr. Teutsch is a big proponent of, you know, endophyte-free fescue and those type things. But, hey, Kentucky 31 has... If you manage it right, it has held this world together for a long yeah, time. And I get a lot better stand. And, I mean, that's my whole thing. You know, I've got to have something that, you know, working a public job, you have to have something that you're going to be able to do something one time and it's going to work.
I said many years ago, if it wasn't for Kentucky 31, New Orleans would not be below sea level.
That's right.
Because most of our state would have already washed away.
That's right. That's right.
Well, as much as we moan and complain about Kentucky 31, the simple fact is we weaned more calves off of Kentucky 31 yep. than any mm-hmm. other grass in Kentucky. Right. So it's important to learn how to use that in grazing systems. I know this is deviating slightly from your topic, but legumes okay. are an important part of managing Kentucky 31. So yes, we've got to have clover in Kentucky 31 pastures. Yep. One of the challenges with Kentucky 31 is that there really is no Kentucky 31 anymore.
Like it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's bags with Kentucky 31 on it, but as far as certified seed, it's very hard to get. So you may be getting endophyte-free in that bag. You may be getting Kentucky 31 in that bag, but there's no way to know for sure.
Mm.
So
really, that's something that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that just ties back to the seed production industry, where that seed's coming from and what they're producing today.
That's yeah. right, and the way public varieties are marketed like that, they're either marketed as a what we call a branded seed, that's just a name on that seed, mm-hmm. or a certified seed. Mm-hmm. And if you can get a blue tag on the bag that says this is Kentucky 31, then you're sure that's what's in the bag. Otherwise, it can be Kentucky 31 printed on the bag, but there's no way to really tell what's in the bag.
Right. Mm. You know, Dr. Teutsch, we've talked about putting in some different things for pasture, and this is going to be really timely when it comes out because, you know, we probably need to be about the time this comes out next Monday is kind of the stretch of time that we need to be thinking about putting in some summer annuals if we're going to like sorghum, sedan grass, and some mm-hmm. different things like that. Talk with us a little bit if we're short on hay. We need something that maybe is a summer annual for hay. What are our options and what can we do from the hay standpoint? Because, you know, we've talked about before the show started, we started talking about, you know, what's the hay crop look like and that kind of thing. So if we're running low on hay, what's going to be our best options?
So for summer annual-wise, probably a sorghum sedan grass will make the most biomass. But it's also a challenge to get cured for sure. So,
absolutely.
Because it has larger stems, things to do to help the curing process is going to be using a mower conditioner that has rollers that are mm-hmm. properly adjusted to crush the stems as they move through the conditioning part of the unit. And that's going to let moisture escape much faster. The other management practice you can use is baleage with these summer annuals. So you would cut them and then wilt them down to somewhere between 55 and 60% moisture, ideally. Sometimes mm-hmm. it'll get a little bit drier. Don't really want to go above 65% moisture because you can have problems with clostridial growth in the bales. But baleage is a good way to manage summer annuals because you can wilt them, get them rolled up in a day or two, and allow them to go through a fermentation once you wrap that bale.
Mm-hmm. I can remember years ago a guy that I worked for put up some sedan grass just like you're talking about in baleage. And I remember that fall when we were feeding that, and it was some of the best forage. I mean, cow just licked it up. I mean, yep. It was really, really good. Very, very palatable.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it really does good when you can – and if you're going to do a lot of sorghum sedan grass or something like that, the baleage thing is the way to go. I mean, Dr. Teutsch, are there people out there that can – like if I decide – of course, I don't own the equipment to do the baleage, you know, to wrap it. And as a matter of fact, I don't even have a hay roller that would roll something that wet. you know, are there people out there that will do that for you? You know, how do we, you know, how do we find those folks? You know, what's the best route to go?
Well, I would say it's probably going to depend a lot on where you're at. I think as you move down into Todd and Christian County, there'll be more opportunities for custom harvesting.
That's kind of tied to the amount of dairies that are in that area.
Right. Yeah. We do have a gentleman outside of Princeton that will do some custom harvesting. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's some opportunities there.
Yeah, and you just kind of need to do your homework. If you're going to go that route, you know, you kind of need to do your homework beforehand. Before you plant, you probably want to talk to whoever you're thinking about getting the custom harvested to make sure that they can do it and get it taken care of for you. And make sure those bales have enough plastic on them. That's another big deal. And if there's any holes that come in the, you know, you need to get those taped up as fast as possible and keep a check on it. You know, throughout the fall, too, don't you, Dr. Toich, to make sure that there's no holes. The birds can tear holes in them, but, you know, different things can make it have holes in it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a cost associated with putting plastic on bales, for sure, and people need to realize that going in, but that's not a place you should skimp. Yeah. We want at least six layers of plastic on those bales to make sure that we exclude oxygen. The whole ensiling process is based on the premise of there's no oxygen in that bale. So we need to make sure we get enough on there. One other thing I wanted to mention with summer annuals, especially the more traditional ones, sorghum, Sudan grass, and pearl millet, is that they can easily get away from you during the growing season. So that's really important that you're on top of management, whether you're grazing it or whether you're going to use it for hay. If we're going to graze it, we want to start to graze at 20 inches. If we're going to harvest for hay, around 40 inches is when we want to cut it. But it doesn't take long to go from that 30 to 40 inches to 6 or 8 feet tall if we get a week or two of wet conditions. So you've really got to be on top of management. And forage quality can decline quite quickly in summer annuals as they mature.
That was one of the things in the demo that you talked about earlier on in Webster County, that I got a lot of calls on that during that summer about how fast it was growing and how quick it could get away from you if you wasn't on top of it. And so,
and the bigger it gets, the harder it is to cure.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I mean, even to get it to wilt for the balage. I mean, when you've got stems that are the size of a quarter, it ain't going to happen. It's going to be bad. So.
There are some dwarf varieties that tend to stay a little bit shorter. So if you're going to use summer annual, some of the improved varieties, so this wouldn't be what you would just get at the farm store, but you'd probably have to look for these from a seed dealer. There are some varieties that have the dwarf characteristic in them. And in that Burkittic dwarf characteristic, it doesn't reduce the number of leaves in the plant, but it reduces the distance between the leaves on the stem. So the stems tend to be shorter and the leaves tend to be the same amount. So you have a higher leaf to stem ratio, which is also good for forage quality.
You know, one thing I'd like to kind of get your thought on before we get too far away from it, we're talking about sorghum Sudan grass, and you mentioned early on one of the things that we have to watch for, one of the drawbacks, if you will, that we might encounter, especially in a year like last year, is nitrate issues and the possibility of prussic acid. In regards to the nitrate issue, we've talked about making balage. That's one of the ways of combating that as well, is once it goes through that ensiling process, it helps to alleviate those persistent nitrate problems.
Right. So you're going to get, if you go through a good fermentation, the key is good fermentation, you'll get a 40 to 60% reduction in nitrates in the balage, which can be significant in a year where you have nitrate accumulation. Nitrates accumulate in plants because growth gets slowed in the plant, normally from drought. So the plant's taking nitrogen up from the soil, if there's a lot of nitrogen in the soil, and before it can be assimilated into amino acids and proteins in the plant, growth slows because of drought. That's when we get nitrate accumulation in the plant. Nitrates tend to be higher in the base of the plant, and so one management practice, if we are into a drier part of the year, is to either not graze or harvest plants higher so that we leave some of the nitrates in the lower portion of the plant.
I know also that, you know, when folks are looking at varieties of sorghum Sudan grass, the BMR, brown midrib.
Right.
Discuss that a little bit, Dr. Teutsch, and kind of explain that to folks that may not understand what that's about.
So there's an abbreviation called BMR, and that stands for brown midrib. And that's an outward expression on the leaf of the plant. So if you look at the leaf of the plant, that rib that kind of runs right up through the middle of the leaf will not be white like it would be in a traditional varieties, but it will be a brown or a tannish color. And that's an outward expression of something that's different inside that plant. And what's different is the level of lignin in that plant. Brown midrib varieties tend to have lower levels of lignin. Lignin is a structural compound in the plant fiber that makes it less digestible in the rumen of the animal. So when we have lower levels of lignin that we find in BMR plants, that means that forage material is more digestible, and animal performance tends to be higher on that same plant that has the BMR trait. BMR traits also available in pearl millet to a lesser extent. Some of the newer pearl millet varieties will have the BMR trait also. So if you're really looking for good animal performance, a Brachytic dwarf with the BMR trait would be a good choice. And you will pay a little bit more for that seed. Mm-hmm. But in the big picture, seed costs usually are the lowest cost in the production of a summer annual. So you've got a lot of other costs that go in there too. So selecting a good variety is important.
Before we leave kind of the establishment and the varieties and all, you know, always want to remind people, if you're going to use a no-till drill and you're drilling those, to calibrate those drills. I know that you've done a lot of work with that, and I know we've got some stickers on the no-till drills here that you can rent from our conservation district walking you through that. But, you know, like you've already said, it's an expensive venture that you're getting ready to go into anyway. So you want to do everything you can to make sure you're getting off to a good start. And if you don't have the drill calibrated and get it seated the way you need to, then you're already behind the eight ball, so to speak, all year long. So just make sure that you calibrate that and do a good job with that.
So we've got a nice video on our KY Forages YouTube channel. If you want to find it, just Google KY Forages YouTube. It'll be the first thing that pops up. There's a drill calibration video on here that's real nice. I'm not saying that because I'm the star of it, but but it is a good video. Probably one of our most watched videos, actually. Yep. And it's funny, I got a call from, I think somebody in, I can't remember where it was now, but it was probably five or six states away was watching that video last mm-hmm. year trying to figure out how to calibrate a drill. Mm-hmm. So that's a good point, Vicki, is make sure. And the other thing to make sure about when you're planting small seed forages is your seeding depth.
Yeah.
You can go way too deep with small seed forages. Mm-hmm. So we don't really need to go any deeper than about an inch with the sorghum Sudan. And
sometimes on those no-till drills, I know on our demo, we had trouble, you know, just being able to do anything with the depth. It's just kind of the way it is, you know. I know we struggle with that a little bit, so just keep that in mind too.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot to do with the drill. The kind of drill that you're using is really tough. And to remind folks also that if you're planning on doing summer annuals or winter annuals or whatever, Dr. Teutsch, this is a reoccurring cost. It's a one and done, you know, so understand that it is, like you said, it does cost something to get established. You have a lot of great forage at the end, you know, out of it, but just understand that this is going to be a reoccurring cost every year if you're going to try to do this.
And you have to manage it more intensely, really. Yes, I mean, it's a more intensive management system than what you're used to in our typical system.
And that's going to be different year to year to year.
That's right.
Because of the year you're working in.
That's right.
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 Because you have different amounts of water. You know, like last year would have been it was a wreck. I mean, it was a wreck.
It would have been hard on summer annuals even last summer, you know, because of the amount of moisture. We definitely would have had nitrate issues to work with more than likely.
Yeah, I mean, the point on the cost is really important. When we establish, a fescue field, we're depreciating that establishment cost over multiple years, you know, 10 years or more. That doesn't happen with summer mm-hmm. annuals. That whole establishment cost goes into 1 year of production. Yep. So that's an important. The other important thing to mention with summer annuals is that there is, or not just summer annuals, but any annuals, every time you establish something, there's a risk of not getting it established. So with a tall fescue pasture, I've got it. And if it's a little bit dry in the spring or the fall, it may not be as productive, but it's still there yep. for the most part.
Yep.
Summer annuals, that dry conditions could cause a complete failure.
Yeah.
One of the other things I just wanted to mention that Jay kind of brought up was drought. And summer annuals are not a panacea in terms of drought. But what warm season grasses bring to the table is that when it does rain, they have the ability to be productive at higher temperatures during the summer months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the C4 or warm season grasses will produce about twice as much dry matter per unit of water used during the summer months. So if we have lower rainfall, even though it's lower, they're going to produce more dry matter with that lower rainfall. If we have the ability to irrigate during the summer months, then we definitely want to use a warm mm-hmm. season grass because they have the ability to grow at higher temperatures.
Right. You know, every time we do this show, we run across something that we think, well, that would make a good show. And I'm thinking somewhere down the line, we maybe do another show, maybe next year, about specific varieties of warm season annuals that we can mm-hmm. look at. Mm-hmm. You have mentioned it, David mentioned it earlier, the Red River crabgrass. When I was working in Christian County, I had a cash hay producer, a friend of ours, dad actually, who had about 15 acres of Red River crabgrass. Mm-hmm. And it was the thing that he liked about it from a cash hay perspective. One, he could make good quality grass hay in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, different from his cool season offerings. But he also put up a lot of square-baled alfalfa. And the management and timing of that cool season grass allowed him to do something in between his alfalfa cuttings.
Yep.
And it was a big, big advantage from a cash hay standpoint.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
But we may do a show just on specific annuals sometime.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'll just mention that University of Kentucky, a lot of people don't know, but we probably have one of the most extensive variety testing programs in the country. So and we actually test varieties of crabgrass. Mm-hmm. So we've got 4 or 5 different varieties of crabgrass that have been in trials for multiple years. So and still one of my favorites, David mentioned it, was Red River. Red River is a good, solid, improved. I know it's strange talking about improved varieties of crabgrass, but it has been selected for longer leaf blades, more upright mm-hmm. growth, and higher productivity over the years. So, yeah.
That's the thing that hurts a lot of those. You mentioned the little barley a minute ago. Mm-hmm. That was a weed I had come into the office week before last.
Yep.
It's known to be of, you know, poor forage quality, but that's one of the reasons is it's all stem and has very little leaf to it. And that's a lot of our summer weeds.
And the cows won't eat it.
Right.
Well, yeah. They just won't hardly eat it.
Yeah.
I mean, it just...
Goats will.
Well, luckily I don't have any goats, so...
We've talked a lot on this show about different topics, about having a plan A, plan B, and plan C. And I think, you know, with these discussions today on the summer annuals, I think that's just another reminder of having your plans together and you know, plan A, if that doesn't work, know what you're going to do with plan B. And then, you know, more importantly, we've talked about the importance of getting that established and the different ways to do that and the importance of getting that established. But you also need to have a plan in place for how you're going to end this summer annual crop, how you're going to kill it out, you know, when you're going to do that, because that's going to get there quicker than what you're expecting mm-hmm. it to. I think that's one of those things. We get busy and it's toward the end of the summer and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's time. We're going to have to get this killed. Then we're going to have to get it seeded. And I think that sometimes that can get away. And I know that's happened before with folks that have had summer annuals, as it just sneaks up on them. So have that plan of what you're going to seed that with in the fall, going back in with a cool season and what you're going to do and how you're going to kill the existing summer annual there. Mm-hmm. And just have that plan in place and ready to go when the time comes around.
You know, that's the one good thing I like about Sargon Sedan grass. And if you're going to go back in there in the fall and refurbish that area, you can come in there and spray that with Roundup because you need to,
right.
because you need to get that fescue and orchard grass established, so that you terminate that crop and then you don't have the prussic acid problem that you normally would have if you let it go to frost.
Right.
Yep. Another thing to keep in mind on the spraying it is if you're not set up to spray yourself, if you're going to spray Roundup or something like that and you don't have a sprayer, you really need to make sure you have your plan in place if you're going to need somebody to custom apply that, because that's a clean out for them. So, I mean, they're going to be, those custom applicators are going to be spraying, and if they're going to go in with a Roundup, that's going to be a complete clean out before they can go on to somebody else. And so that needs to be worked out, those details, before the day before you need them there.
Right, because that's typically a time of the year where we're not burning down crops like we would be in the spring.
Right.
No,
right.
And so it is a clean out. So
real quick, Jay brought it up before we ever got on the air, and I want Dr. Toyce to just touch on this about the fertilization, nitrogen fertilization in the late fall of putting that on. When do we do that? What are the advantages of doing that and all that kind of stuff? I know y'all are doing some research there at Princeton on it.
Yeah, we've done several years of research at Princeton, and it seems like the forage guys are a little bit slow. You know, the turf grass guys have known about fall fertilization of turf grass stands for, decades. Mm-hmm. And A.J. Powell at University of Kentucky used to talk about it. John Streeter at Ohio State used to talk about it. And essentially what you do is you come on later. So this would be later than a traditional stockpiling nitrogen application. You would probably be around Thanksgiving would be when you would put it on. And you'd put a small amount of nitrogen on, 40 to 60 pounds probably. And the plant doesn't grow much in the fall, but it does take the nitrogen up. So it's still there. It's just not producing much growth in the fall. So it takes that nitrogen up, and the nitrogen is related to how many tillers the plant has. Those are the kind of the stems that come out of the crown of the plant. So we tend to thicken stands up when we put fall fertilization on and to get that plant kind of in a position to really grow in the spring. And what we found was that we got a linear response in the spring to nitrogen applied in the fall. And that linear response was every pound of nitrogen we put on in the fall, we got about 22 pounds additional dry matter in the spring. So it's a fairly good nitrogen response. We've got a more detailed trial going on right now. We just took our first harvest last week off that trial. So and the plots look good.
Good. Folks need to, Vicki was talking about a plan A, B, and C. You know, I would plan on doing it. I think this would be a good recommendation for folks if the weather's ever, and you know, by that time, normally the weather kind of gets straightened out and we have some moisture. Mm-hmm. So that would be a good time. If you're not stockpiling fescue necessarily, if you want to do this and that kind of gives you a jump start in the spring on growth, this may be the way to go for you.
You know, if your stands are a little bit thinner and you want to thicken them up, that may be a good option for you. And
as far as our custom applicators go, if you're hiring that done, that's also a little bit better time of the year for them, because they don't have quite as much to do. Right. Easier to get over the ground.
Yep.
So we always like to wrap things up with a timely tip. And today, most of our topic has been on summer annuals, and we want to just use the time for this week's timely tip to say select a summer annual that fits your management style. We talked about a lot of different species and how some of them have a little more management that needs to take place for them to be optimum. We just want to remind producers that if you're going to look at a summer annual, right now is the time of the year that you need to be thinking about that. And be sure and look over all the species and pick something that's going to fit into your management scheme.
Yeah. So. Absolutely. And Dr. Toyce, give your date of your tour again and all the details real quick.
So the tour is going to be right outside of Princeton, Kentucky. It's going to be on May 25th from 3 to 7 p.m. 3 p.m. is registration. The actual tour starts at 4. It's rain or shine. The only reason we would cancel it for weather is if we had a lightning storm. It's just too much of a risk for us to have it. There'll be a small cost for the dinner at the door. So, but we would ask you to pre-register online, just saying that you're coming so we know how many hamburgers to meet. I didn't mention it, but we're going to be featuring grass-finished ground beef produced at that farm for our dinner.
Well, that's neat. Nice.
Yeah, that'd be really neat.
I think the Caldwell Lyon County Cattlemen's Association is going to be taking care of cooking that night, I believe I read.
They are. So, yep.
Sounds like a good evening. Well, we want to Thanks to Dr. Teutsch and our host for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.